Welcome to Breaking Down Barriers, a podcast about entrepreneurship-led economic development.
Here is your host, Kim Vogel, Chief Strategy and Marketing Officer at Economic Impact Catalyst.
I am so excited to get right into our podcast today with Giselle Hamm and Christopher Merritt, who are doing some amazing things with rural economic development. So best place to do it is just to start with introductions and for them to tell all of us about the amazing work that they are doing in rural America, in the heartland of our country. So Giselle, would you like to start and introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Giselle Hamm. I am Program Director for the Mapping the Future of Your Community program at the Illinois Institute for Rural Affairs at Western Illinois University.
And I'm Chris Merritt. I'm Dean for Innovation and Economic Development and also the Director of the Illinois Institute for Rural Affairs at Western Illinois University.
Awesome. So guys, tell our audience about the mapping program and what it is focused on and what it is that you're trying to accomplish.
So our program has been around since 1991. It's basically a community-driven strategic visioning and planning program for rural Illinois communities. So the Institute was created back in 1989, and when they started working with rural communities, they could see that just like a successful business or a successful larger city, rural communities needed to have a plan in place. And unlike larger cities, they really don't have the human or financial resources to actually, you know, hire someone to come in and do a lot of community and economic development initiatives. So it really relies on a grassroots effort of community members to come around and take action and make things happen. So our program basically pulls together a good diverse group from the community of 30 to 60 or more residents, bringing them together, taking them through a 5 3-hour session program where we look at where are we now, where do we want to be, and how do we get there. And so through the process, they develop a vision for the community looking out 10 to 30 years. And with that, goals, strategies, and projects to make it happen. And so we have action teams that are formed around each goal that's identified, and they get to work and really make things happen in the community to turn their community into that ideal future.
That's awesome. So mapping is the name of your program. And like all good economic development entities, right? It's typically an acronym for something. So Chris, can you tell us the acronym and tell us the entire name of the program that you guys do in Illinois?
So it's the Management and Planning Program in Non-Metropolitan Groups. So it is metaphorical mapping, if you will, sort of. Although we actually use, you know, GIS and actual maps in there as well. But yeah, we're trying to get people to coalesce around some core ideas, if you will. And, you know, I think the larger philosophy is that many rural communities, well, maybe I should start by saying, you know, as part of the mapping program is part of the Illinois Institute for Rural Affairs. And we were founded really as an outgrowth out of the farm crisis. And there was this recognition that, you know, the farm crisis was not just about farmers. It was really sort of a broad, multifaceted challenge for rural communities and the agricultural sector. And, you know, we had sort of recognized that there was an interdependence between the farm economy and the rural non-farm economy. And, you know, you needed to look beyond agriculture to address many of the issues in rural development. And so Giselle's program does that, right? I mean, she's had farmers as part of her mapping process, but it also gets, you know, chambers of commerce, elected officials, high school students, retirees, you know, just a broad cross-section of people. And what I think is remarkable about it is that it's often the case that this is the first time anybody has ever asked them, you know,
yeah,
how can you imagine your community being different. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of places in rural Illinois, but as well as across the Midwest, that have had long-term population decline. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe their population peaked 1980, 1970, 1940, 1910. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think people kind of fall into this psychology of decline, you know, sort of negative self-talk. And I think one of the things that Giselle is able to do is to get a community to think differently about itself. Mm-hmm. And I'm always amazed that Giselle is able to identify leaders who may not themselves see themselves as leaders to step up and offer really great ideas and offer great energy. So, you know, this process is about leadership capacity increase. It's about getting people to think a little bit differently about themselves and imagine an alternative future, right? Instead of being on that same glide path into oblivion, you know, what could our community look like if we just used our imagination? And Giselle's been in well over 100 communities across the state. And it's remarkable to me some of the outcomes that she's generated.
Yeah, that's awesome. I would love to get into that a little bit, Giselle. You know, it's obvious that you're using design thinking and growth mindset and all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, when you're walking into a community and say, you know, it's the very first time, how do you convince them that, you know, this is something that could really be beneficial to the long-term success of their community? Like, I want to hear obviously you're magical. You can tell you've been in over 100 communities and you're doing this. So that's wonderful. But, you know, what does your process look like for getting that buy-in from communities to see, hey, there really is something that we can do that's different?
Really, in most cases, we don't have to do a lot of convincing, because usually what happens is I get a phone call and the person on the other end says, you know, we've heard about your program and I think we need to do this. We need to do something because we have empty downtown storefronts. Our young people are leaving to go to the university, but not seeing a reason to come back. We have aging infrastructure. You know, we are losing businesses. We need help. And so usually it's, you know, it's apparent to them that they need to take action because they know our state and federal government is not going to come in and save them. It's really got to be a community-driven grassroots effort to take action to get that downward curve going in the upward direction.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So do you have examples of communities where you have really just seen them, you know, not only buy into, you know, the entire process, but just have said, okay, we're ready to kind of go over and above, you know, what we've got. Can you share examples with us of communities that are doing amazing things when it comes to economic development?
So one of the communities that really has always stuck out to us is actually one of our first communities, and that would be Dietrich, Illinois. And I think they went through their first mapping process in 1992. And since then, they've gone through, I think, a total of 5 or 6 of our programs. So they'll do updates. And so they've just been really one of our big success stories, and that, you know, they're a very small community, you know, 500 people, but they saw the need to actually have a plan in place and get the residents around community and economic development. And so, you know, going way back to 1992, they've done some amazing things. One of the first things that came out of the 1992 program was to develop a whole rural water district. And so that was kind of their first thing. But since then, they have actually developed housing subdivisions. They have 2 small industrial parks, and they are actually growing in population, which is unusual for rural communities in Illinois. Most of them are declining, but they are actually growing. So now I think the population's around 700, I believe. But they're just a really good success story. And when we did their most recent mapping update back in 2019, they had one goal around childcare and one goal around parks and recreation. And it was amazing to us because, you know, one of their strategies around that would help with both of those goals was to develop a community center. And so by the last session that they participated in back in 2019, they already had kind of a sketch up produced that would kind of show what that community center would look like. So it's been built. They raised the money. They got some grant funding through an IDNR park grant to make it happen. So now they have this wonderful recreation and childcare center in this tiny community. So they're just a really good example of what a small group of committed citizens can accomplish, because they see a need and or a want in the community and they take action, and they get along really well. They work well together. They're hardworking. So it's just been awesome to see.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. That, you know, takes me into this next question. And Chris, I want to ask you this one. You know, between the USDA, the Census Bureau, everybody kind of has a little bit different definition of what we mean by rural. Can you define for us, you know, how we look, particularly from an economic development perspective, what we mean when we say rural and rural community?
Well, that's a great question and a challenging question. There are, as you probably know, more than a dozen definitions of rural, depending on which federal agency you're working with and which funding program you're trying to access. You know, as a starting point, we use the Office of Management and Budget, Census Bureau. You know, a county is metro to the extent that it has a core urban area of 50,000 people or more, and surrounding counties, if, you know, 25% of the core are commuting out into the adjacent county, or if the adjacent county, more than 25% are commuting into the core area. So, you know, rural then becomes everything outside that, right? So rural is defined by what it isn't, which, you know, part of that negative narrative, right? They don't give a direct definition. They define it by what it isn't. But our primary, I should also say, you know, there's 102 counties in Illinois, and we have worked in all 102. So yes, we are the Illinois Institute for Rural Affairs, but sometimes I feel like we should be the Illinois Institute for Rural and Community Affairs, because, you know, I think we sort of collectively wake up in the morning and say, how can we make the world a slightly better place? And when people ask, we want to do our best to help. But, you know, Giselle mentioned Dietrich, you know, a place of 1,000 people. And, you know, our sweet spot, I think, and Giselle can chime in on this, but I think we're working in communities really between 500 people and 15,000. I think maybe the largest we've worked in is around 20,000. And our primary clientele are communities that really don't have that full-time planning, economic development capacity. They don't have the full-time elected official. And so, you know, that's where we're trying to come in and provide for them sort of professional planning in a way that a city of Peoria or a Chicagoland suburb would just take for granted, right? So that's, so defining rural, maybe we're defining it not quite directly either. We're defining rural as communities that probably need help because they don't have full-time support, full-time leadership capacity. And, you know, we're not wanting to really compete with the private sector on consulting. And so we're kind of flying below the radar, I guess, in that regard. And, you know, I guess one of the things that, you know, small towns, you know, they offer ideas about what they might want to do. And so what I think what Giselle's process does is it identifies these concrete projects, which then offer, you know, fundable projects, whether it's USDA or in Illinois, it's the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. But another sort of underappreciated funding source, and this is something that Giselle emphasizes, is community foundations. And a really great example is in rural community of Rushville, Illinois. And you know, one of the things that I really like about Giselle's program is that it's a serious planning process, right? We don't pretend that community development can be done on a Sunday afternoon, right? It turns out real community development is hard work, and it should be done in a thoughtful manner, which is Giselle's approach. And what's interesting is I think outside people who might be looking, you know, it turns out there's some hidden wealth in rural areas. And if people with a philanthropic mindset, if they see a serious process going on that has broad community buy-in, you know, this is another way that Giselle's process kind of frees up funding. And I don't know, Giselle, if you wanted to sort of elaborate a little bit on what happened in Rushville.
Yeah, so Rushville has gone through our process now three times. In the early 90s, again, they were one of our first mapping communities as well. But then we've since then gone through a process back in 2014 and again in, I believe, 2020. But I know during the 2014 program, they also had a parks and recreation goal. And as one of their strategies was, let's develop a recreation center because they didn't have a YMCA or any type of thing. And so they started that. Their organization, Grow Rushville, determined to make this happen. Word started getting out in the community, and then they actually had an anonymous donor say, you know, I would like to make this happen. And so they donated the funding that was required to actually create the recreation center. So it was just pretty amazing. But we've found that, you know, there's just something about going through this process that kind of legitimizes those what we call big, hairy, audacious goals. And, you know, people look and say, hey, this group, you know, they're serious about this. They want to make it happen. And this is really something that people can get behind and invest in. So that is a really good example of how, you know, sometimes, you know, getting those ideas out there could spur some investment from people in the community.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That's a great story. You know, you guys, you've talked, I love that, you know, communities are really looking at this from that quality of life perspective, right? Like that's such a huge thing because that's what's going to change the dynamic of your workforce and, you know, change small business ownership and all of those kind of things. So what does, you know, in your process, Giselle, and, you know, obviously you help communities set goals and, you know, really build that strategy around that. What has been some of the best practice that you've seen around support for small businesses in communities, right, where, you know, you want to be able to buy from your neighbor, you want to be able to buy from, you know, the person down the street? What have you seen as some of the best practices in these smaller communities?
It used to be that it was all about, you know, business retention and expansion and attracting industry. And really, there's been a change in focus. And we really get, you know, try to get communities to think about, you know, attracting entrepreneurs and supporting, you know, those small businesses and those potential entrepreneurs, and getting even the young people to think about the possibility of starting their own business. You know, at our local schools, we really are training our children to work for other people. And we want communities to think about helping their young people think about starting their own business. And so there are programs out there such as the CEO program out of Effingham through the Midland Institute for Entrepreneurship. It's creating entrepreneurial opportunities. And that program is an opportunity for high school students to learn more about entrepreneurship. And actually, they have them create their own little business. And so just those kind of practices, I think, are good. And really thinking more about having an environment that is conducive for creating entrepreneurial ventures, attracting remote workers and attracting technology-based businesses. But of course, you know, with that, you need to make sure you have high-speed broadband available throughout the community. And so many times our communities will actually have that as a strategy to achieve, a thriving business community.
And just to build on Giselle's comments, you know, the idea of entrepreneurship can take, many, many forms. And so in addition to the mapping program within the Institute for Rural Affairs, we have several other programs that really build on the work that Giselle has led. So, for example, we have something called the Value-Added Sustainable Development Center in the Institute, and it's funded primarily through a USDA Rural Cooperative Development grant. And so, through that program, we're trying to promote cooperatives, which are the people don't really appreciate that is nonetheless a business. And it's often a good business for where the traditional private sector doesn't see a profit to be made. The co-op is, again, grassroots community ownership to deliver on what could be a non-existent anchor institution, to create that anchor institution, for example, such as a grocery store. And so, Giselle, through her planning process, has had several communities say that they have to drive too far for a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk. And so we've actually helped to open up some grocery store, cooperatively run grocery stores, again, around the idea of community ownership. And then another best practice that I think is worth mentioning is really about not just plan creation, but about plan implementation, right? And that's what I think we offer, a 1-2 punch of plan creation and plan implementation. And we do that through our Peace Corps Fellows program. And so we recruit folks who have an undergraduate degree, they've gone abroad, Niger, Paraguay, Panama, they've spent their 2 years in the Peace Corps, and then they come to Western Illinois University, they enroll in one of 10 master's programs, and then they spend 2 to 3 semesters on our campus. And then we send them out into rural Illinois to serve an 11-month, 40-hour-per-week internship. And ideally, we place them in a community that has gone through Giselle's program. And the idea there is we're going to get some and so that's an aside. I think people get really excited. Giselle just does a great job of getting people enthused. But then and this is just natural, after a certain level of amount of time after the planning process, the real life comes back.
And the work has to get done, right?
That enthusiasm from the planning process, the energy is sapped away by the real world responsibilities of work and family obligations and so forth. But having a Peace Corps fellow there keeps that momentum going and achieves some early wins working with the volunteers that Giselle has recruited. And keeps that momentum going and gets some early wins so people can see, wow, this plan isn't just some make-believe document or, thing where, the traditional idea of, we make a plan, we put up on the bookshelf. These plans are implemented. And so the implementation is obviously key. And Giselle also follows up. It's almost like once you're a mapping community, you can never leave, right? She provides funding for continuing education. She visits. So there's a lot of that partnership. I think creating and sustaining that mindset of forward thinking in the community. But I think that Peace Corps Fellows program, Giselle also has AmeriCorps Vista volunteers. So it's just, it's about capacity building and capacity extension for small towns that are just, running, on a bare bones government administration. We're trying to build on that to help the community thrive.
I love that. Giselle, obviously you're working with small but mighty communities, right? Do you have a small but mighty team tell us a little bit about the dynamic of your team. I love that, you know, the Peace Corps is a part of it. You've got AmeriCorps a part of it. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how your team works and functions.
Well, actually, in the mapping program, we just have two staff and a grad student as well. That's
small but mighty. So,
small but mighty, yeah. And my colleague, Linda Lee, she's actually been with us since about 2010, I believe. I've been with the mapping program since 2006. So, yeah. But we kind of have our routine going. We know what we're doing. And so I did want to mention, you know, Chris's discussion about Peace Corps, the Peace Corps Fellows Program and the interns that are sent out to work in our communities. It's just been such an asset. And I did want to actually mention, getting back to the whole business best practices, how can you support businesses? And one example of where kind of our mapping program, you know, combined with the Peace Corps Fellows Program led to, you know, a really cool initiative is Mattoon. Where one of their goals was really around workforce development. They had a lot of jobs that were actually going unfilled because they did not have the skilled workforce. So back in, I believe, 2017, they decided one of the strategies would be to build create a business incubator. And so they were able to get a Peace Corps fellow intern. He worked on that initiative, actually helped get, you know, the funding and get everything going. And it was a great public partner, public-private partnership between the city and Rural King, where they actually established a business incubator and co-working space. So that was just a really great way to, you know, kind of support their businesses and workforce.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys seeing, you know, just from your, you know, the research, obviously, that you guys are doing, your boots on the ground, all of those kind of things, are you seeing workforce continuing to be an issue? I mean, obviously, it's an issue in larger communities. I'm assuming, don't want to assume, but it's, you know, obviously probably an issue in rural communities too. And are you seeing good solutions that communities are coming up with when it comes to workforce development?
Yes, it's a growing issue. And it's interesting, you know, being in this program since 06, we've seen really a shift in what those high priority goals are in our communities. And we're seeing more and more communities identify workforce development as a high priority goal in the communities and really building a skilled workforce. And so we've seen really a lot of good collaborative efforts between our mapping groups and the local community colleges. And so they're creating programs based on the needs in the communities and the local businesses around workforce. And so that's one thing we've seen. We've seen that in Mattoon and Effingham and several other places.
And to build on that, there's an interesting change going on in rural Illinois. And I know that it's going on in across the Midwest and Great Plains, which is some and many rural communities are, in fact, you know, their population might not be growing and, in fact, maybe has been shrinking for a long time. But despite that, it's becoming more diverse. And so, you know, part of workforce development and part of entrepreneurship, I think we need to recognize the increasing diversity and expanding the idea of who can be an entrepreneur. You know, thinking about English as a second language kinds of training as part of workforce development. And then something that we've been doing, I've already mentioned some of our other programs. We also manage two small business development centers, kind of shows our commitment to the Main Street economy. We think entrepreneurship has to be, it's not the panacea, it's not the end all be all, but it has to be a really important part of any economic development strategy. So, you know, we've hired somebody bilingual, Spanish, English, who can address that so that we expand and we're more inclusive about who can participate in sort of becoming a middle class person. That's just in the last 20 years, in particular, last 10 years in particular, that has just become an important issue that we want to make sure we're helping happen.
I want to move to a little bit, you know, talking about, you know, we hear all the time, right, whether in the news and any of our economic development circles, right, this whole idea of, you know, our distressed zip codes, if you will. There's always a lot of emphasis put on distressed zip codes in urban areas, right? We all know that there are just as many distressed, right, zip codes in rural areas too. You know, what are you seeing as some of the major issues that communities are dealing with? And do you get the sense that lots of these communities continue to be hopeful, right? I think hope is a really big thing, right? Like, you always got to have that hope first, and then now we figure out how to, you know, get the boots on the ground to get the work done, right? So, you know, what are you seeing from those communities, you know, that are designated as distressed zip codes?
One of the biggest is probably deteriorating infrastructure and aging infrastructure. That comes up all the time. And oftentimes, you know, our communities will have a goal around something about how can we, you know, increase our population, you know, so they'll have goals that, you know, how can we get more people in the community? We want to grow, but the infrastructure doesn't allow it. And so that comes out a lot. I mean, they may want to start a small industrial park, but, you know, they just don't have the infrastructure or the capacity to make that happen. They may want to create a housing subdivision, but infrastructure is an issue. So that comes up time and time again. And then, you know, even water and sewer issues and for the existing community that they have, that's a challenge.
And again, to extend on that again, yes, infrastructure, not just aging infrastructure, but new infrastructure such as broadband. I mean, the digital divide is real. And in West Central Illinois and in far Southern Illinois, the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity has an office of broadband, and they've been at the census tract level trying to map out, you know, who is confronting digital distress, if you will, where they don't have access to a computer, they don't have access to an internet subscription, and they're trying to figure out ways to get funding to work with their utilities, the phone company, phone cooperatives, and so on, to get that kind of what's now has to be essential. You know, broadband is now essential infrastructure. How to expand that out to the far reaches of our rural communities? So, yeah, infrastructure is always, you know, where we have a lower population density with a smaller tax base, which makes it, you know, just like in the 1930s, extending electricity out into rural areas. The same thing is happening with broadband, is, you know, trying to make a business case for extending it out into the far reaches is really hard. And so the state and the rural cooperatives are working to do that. But it's a challenge. Yeah, it's a challenge.
And those of our communities that do understand the importance of having a good broadband, you know, really benefit from that. We're seeing, you know, that they're attracting remote workers. We've had some cases where someone may be living in Colorado. I know in Hillsboro, that was kind of a thing where, you know, they kind of got things going through the mapping program. They developed a community organization known as Imagine Hillsboro, and word started getting out amongst their some of the younger people who had gone to school in Hillsboro, and they could see that there were great things happening in the community and wanted to move back and be a part of it. And so that was kind of neat. And many of them work in the technology field. And so they were able to work remotely and live in Hillsboro. So that's been really cool. But Hillsboro understood the importance of having broadband access throughout the city. And so they actually, that was one of their initiatives that came out of their first mapping program, was to ensure that they had broadband, you know, throughout the city, and then free Wi-Fi in the downtown. So that was pretty awesome. And getting kind of back to some of the issues with our distressed communities, another one would be actually the deteriorating buildings, the historical buildings. And that's always a challenge. There's so many beautiful historical structures in many of our communities, but they're falling apart. And, you know, where do you get the funding to actually put in a new roof so that water isn't continuing to deteriorate the building? So, you know, the deteriorating buildings is just such a big issue in many of our communities now.
All right, you guys, this has been an amazing conversation, but I really do want us to be able to end on a very positive note. So kind of my final question or my final comment is, you know, what are you, number one, most proud of the work that you guys have been doing? And what is your best piece of advice for other economic developers out there?
Well, there's so many things. I mean, we're so proud of our mapping communities, and it's just so neat to see them all come together and get excited about the future of their community and to see them make cool things happen. And it's really about the people. I mean, we always say, you know, we can do this process, we can facilitate this program in 10 different communities and get 10 different levels of success. It all boils down to the people. And so we see some awesome things happening. So really to point out, you know, just what we're most proud of, I couldn't say. We're just proud of all of the awesome communities we work in and everything that they're accomplishing. And, you know, I would really say a best practice really is just to bring the community together and come up with a vision for the community and get people engaged. And, you know, that's a sign of a successful community is the fact that they understand the importance of engaging in planning at the community resident level. So we've seen it happen and all across this wonderful state. So
awesome. Okay, Chris, what about you? What are you most proud of?
So, you know, I'm going to start by saying I'm most proud of having, I have fabulous colleagues. So I'm just going to say that. And I think that because of that, we punch way above our weight class in terms of the work that we do and the impact that we have. And I think one of the dimensions of that is it's sort of holistic. So I, you know, mentioned, you know, Giselle's doing the planning. We have a Peace Corps Fellows program. We talked about community ownership of anchor institutions. So we're promoting cooperatives, entrepreneurship. And then we also, we have two small business development centers. So I mentioned that. And we also have a rural transit assistance center. And so one of the, I think, underappreciated elements of any community development is mobility and accessibility. You know, an asset isn't an asset until people can access those assets, right? And so, you know, in rural areas, we were talking about inclusivity before, about entrepreneurship. I think communities, you know, rural communities where we're having increasing numbers of senior citizens and low-income families, just making sure that you don't forget the local transportation, where we don't have public transportation like Chicago, and we don't have Uber, we don't have Lyft. So, you know, any part of a successful community and economic development should pay attention to the transportation. And so we feel blessed that we have that. Another element of rural community and economic development is that it can be a daunting task because it's hard to know where to start, right? Yes, we should start with a plan. Yes, we should start from a plan, right? But should it be housing? Should it be entrepreneurship? Is renewable energy? Should it be education, technology? And so, you know, one of the best practices, I guess, is again, the mapping program allows the community to prioritize for themselves where they want to start, but they also understand that it's a complex issue and that they shouldn't give up just because it seems to be a hard process, right? there's been a lot of things that have happened to a community over 20 or 30 or 50 years, and you may not turn things around, you know, in 6 months. So it's the issue of persistence, you know, that's why we have the Peace Corps Fellow to help with that, and then Giselle revisits. And so community development is really a labor of love, I think, and persistence pays off.
Boy, isn't that the truth. Any last nuggets of wisdom for other economic developers and folks that are doing the same kind of work from either one of you?
We love partnerships, by the way. So yes. If anybody wants to, we succeed to the extent that we've had great partners. We have had that. And so if anyone is listening and wants to chat about the Illinois Institute for Rural Affairs and see how we've struggled and thrived, I would love to do that.
Beautiful. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Breaking Down Barriers, a podcast about entrepreneurship-led economic development. Special thanks to our renowned guests for joining us. You can find show notes, more episodes, send us ideas, and subscribe to our newsletter on our website, economicimpactcatalyst.com. Breaking Down Barriers is a presentation of Economic Impact Catalyst and is edited by Lauren Bernard. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Breaking Down Barriers, available for free wherever you listen to your podcasts.